On this edition of Free Culture Radio, the agony over ecstasy. Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On June 4th, the Psychopharmacologic Drugs Advisory Committee of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration voted against the approval of an application by Lykos Therapeutics for its PTSD treatment involving psychotherapy and the use of methamphetamine, a drug more commonly known as MDMA, ecstasy, or Molly. Now, specifically, the committee voted no on two questions. First, do the available data show that MDMA is effective in patients with post-traumatic stress disorder? On this question, the committee vote was 2 yeses and 9 noes. And second, do the benefits of MDMA with FDA's proposed Risk Evaluation and Mitigation Strategy, or REMS, outweigh its risks for the treatment of patients with PTSD? On this question, the committee vote was 1 yes and 10 noes. Lykos Therapeutics, by the way, is the company formerly known as MAPS Public Benefit Corporation. MAPS PBC was launched by the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies in 2014. A lot of people were surprised by the committee's votes and are still trying to understand what happened. So on this month's edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to look, well, give a listen, to what happened at that FDA committee hearing. Let's start with Dr. David Millis. David Millis, MD, is a clinical reviewer in the Division of Psychiatry at the FDA.
Listed here are some of the key uncertainties about the efficacy data in these trials. Although we do have two positive studies, these results are in the context of dramatic functional unblinding. We know that it is difficult to control the impact of functional unblinding in psychedelic clinical trials. And the applicant did use blinded central raters to attempt to mitigate the impact of unblinding. Nonetheless, based on the results of the unblinding questionnaire in MAP2, it is clear that participants were aware of their treatment assignment, and that could impact their report of symptom control. As Dr. Farchione noted in her opening comments, a study that is functionally unblinded may still be able to be considered as an adequate and well-controlled study. However, the potential influence of bias needs to be factored into the interpretation of the study results. It is important to consider if there were adequate methods to minimize bias, the magnitude of the treatment effects, the robustness of the study results, and what is known about the natural history of the condition. We also have some exploratory data suggesting that the effects of methamphetamine may be durable, but this is based on a single follow-up assessment with a high degree of variability in time to visit. Further, because the applicants who enrolled in MP Long had fared better in the parent study than those who did not enroll, we have concerns about selection bias. There also remains an unresolved question of the impact of non-study drug use between the parent studies and MP Long. Finally, the applicant has presented methamphetamine as an aid to psychotherapy. However, the role of psychotherapy and its contribution to the observed treatment response has not been formally evaluated. Also, given the inherent flexibility in the therapy manual, there may have been considerable variability in therapeutic approach. However, there were no evaluations comparing whether these changes in therapeutic approach had any influence on efficacy. I will now move on to a review of safety. The most common adverse events detected in the phase 3 trials are listed here, with most being consistent with prior published literature on MDMA and the effects of stimulant class, and serotonergic drugs. Most adverse events occurred during the medication session and resolved prior to the scheduled discharge at 8 hours. However, as previously noted, we have no information on the frequency or time course of any abuse-related adverse events, if those events were considered positive, favorable, or neutral. In both MAP1 and MAP2, blood pressure and heart rate were assessed at baseline, 1.5 hours after the first dose of study drug, and at the end of the medication session. Both blood pressure and heart rate were elevated at the 1.5-hour assessment in the mitomethamphetamine group, with blood pressure returning to baseline by the end of the 8-hour medication session, but heart rate remaining slightly elevated. Roughly 6% of participants in the mitomethamphetamine group experienced elevations in systolic blood pressure exceeding 180 milligrams of mercury, compared to no participants in the placebo group. Although no major adverse cardiac events were observed in the development program, rapid elevations in blood pressure and heart rate can increase the risk of myocardial infarction, myocardial ischemia, central nervous system hemorrhage, or aortic dissection. Because the risk for these events is highest for individuals with pre-existing cardiovascular disease, it will be important to appropriately label these risks if mitomethamphetamine is approved. We also have concerns about the potential proarrhythmic effects of mitomethamphetamine. A thorough QT study was not performed as part of this development program. However, it is likely that such a study would have been confounded by any drug-related increase in heart rate. The applicant did conduct alternative analyses to evaluate the potential of mitomethamphetamine to prolong the QT interval. However, these analyses covered only about half of the therapeutic dose, and the HERG assay did not assess metabolites or include appropriate positive controls. The applicant did submit non-clinical cardiovascular studies, adverse event reports from phase two and phase three studies, and results of their literature search suggesting low proarrhythmic potential for mitomethamphetamine. As part of our review, we consulted the Division of Cardiology and Neurology, who identified literature cases of arrhythmia associated with illicit MDMA use that were not included in the applicant's literature review. However, these case reports were confounded by other substances and lacked data on dose and frequency of use. In the development program, there was a single serious adverse event of cardiac arrhythmia in one phase two study. That participant required emergency room assessment and overnight monitoring. Because that participant had a single premature ventricular contraction on baseline ECG at time of entry into the study, the investigator assessed the participant's repeated ventricular extrasystoles as an exacerbation of pre-existing ventricular ectopy and as likely related to mitomethamphetamine. Overall, the available data is insufficient to fully assess the cardiovascular risks of mitomethamphetamine. However, the known and potential risks can be described in labeling. In addition, we are considering alternatives for further assessing any QT prolongation potential of mitomethamphetamine, such as a dedicated ECG pharmacodynamic study. Such a study could be performed in the post-marketing setting if this drug is approved.
That was David Millis, MD, a clinical reviewer in the Division of Psychiatry at the FDA. He was providing an overview of MDMA for FDA's Psychopharmacologic Drugs Advisory Committee at its June 4th meeting, at which it considered an application by Lykos Therapeutics for approval of its MDMA-assisted therapy. Back with more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. There was time for public comment at this committee meeting. Let's hear some of that. Neshe Devineau, PhD, is a senior lecturer at the Johns Hopkins University Writing Program and is the Medicine, Society, and Culture Research Fellow at Symposia.
My name is Neshe Devineau, and I'm a researcher at Johns Hopkins University with expertise in psychedelic bioethics. I co-authored a citizen petition to extend the open public hearing at this meeting. Lykos claims its training program will reduce the risk of boundary violations by teaching the specific psychological intervention from its clinical trials. But the clinical trials failed in this regard. This committee has been misled by Lykos to believe that this intervention was non-directive and empathetic. Lykos has obscured its actual intervention in its submissions to the FDA. This intervention is acknowledged in this 2015 paper by founder Rick Doblin. Doblin admits that Lykos's entire therapeutic approach is based on Stanislav Grof's spiritual teachings, and that the essence of that treatment approach is a death-rebirth process. Although this specific intervention isn't in any of the briefing documents that were submitted to the committee, It is associated with identifiable patterns of harm across Lykos's clinical trials. Lykos's intervention is described more fully in the book Integral Psychedelic Therapy. Two of its three editors were Lykos trainers and phase three therapists, and it was endorsed by prominent members of Lykos's inner circle. In this book, Veronica Gold, a Lykos supervisor, trainer, and phase three therapist, describes pinning down a patient as their distress escalated to the point of shouting, quote, "Go away, get your effing hands away from me," end quote. But Gold did not stop. As demonstrated by the many Lykos therapists who endorse this abusive practice, this is an accepted component of the intervention that Lykos presented to this committee as necessary for positive patient outcomes. Lykos would like this committee to believe that significant boundary violations were limited to a single phase two participant. Although this participant enlisted the media to draw attention to the dangers of Lykos's therapy, the components of her on-camera physical assault are still explicitly taught as part of Lykos's intervention. After submitting my 17-page written comments to this committee, I was connected with a phase three participant whose PTSD symptoms were exacerbated by Lykos's clinical trial. I learned they were under the care of therapist Veronica Gold, and they continue to experience flashback nightmares of the specific intervention that Lykos expects this committee to support. Lykos argues that its training will ensure that boundaries are maintained, but its intervention heightens risks for participants by incentivizing boundary violations. In addition to gross violations in phase two, previously unreported violations include Lykos's senior leadership having sexual encounters with a vulnerable individual who was then recruited into phase three. The most significant harms in Lykos's clinical trials were not caused by MDMA, but by the people who were entrusted to supervise its administration. If the committee would like additional information, I'm happy to provide it. Thank you.
That was Neshe Deveneau, PhD, a senior lecturer at the Johns Hopkins University Writing Program and the Medicine, Society, and Culture Research Fellow at Symposia. Brian Pace, PhD, is a lecturer who teaches psychedelic studies at the University of Ohio.
My name is Brian Pace. I am a lecturer teaching psychedelic studies in the Department of Plant Pathology at The Ohio State University. I am also a co-author of the Citizen Petition, which raised serious concerns about the NDA under review. I thank the FDA for granting extended time in this response to our petition. No conflicts. I submit that Lykos is a therapy cult that uses the application under review to further mystical and utopian goals. This lens explains the mounting allegations against them regarding research misconduct and clinical trial participant harms. In my paper, Right-Wing Psychedelia, I analyze Lykos leadership's simply stated aims for instrumentalizing the drug under review to change people's beliefs as part of an ongoing project of global spiritual conversion. This spiritual conversion underlies their promise of solutions to more material concerns, like bringing about world peace or solving climate change. While these are not the first dubious promises to be made by applicants before this agency, they are perhaps the most grandiose. I'm obligated to state the obvious. MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD is not going to result in the, quote, spiritualization of humanity, unquote. And such claims are the prophecies of a therapy cult. The FDA is under no obligation to evaluate these spiritual claims, but this agency is tasked with monitoring institutional review board compliance and act when study sponsors confess to casual human experimentation with the drug under consideration at Burning Man. That Lykos leadership felt comfortable admitting this while clinical trials were ongoing betrays a lack of internal accountability and an organizational culture of deep impunity. Lykos has exploited this lack of monitoring and sanction from the FDA. In fact, they're betting on it. At South by Southwest this year, Lykos CEO Amy Emerson shared that patients presenting increased suicidal ideation is, quote, actually part of the process, unquote, of psychedelic therapy. In the same breath, she acknowledged that committing instances like these to medical records would be poorly received by gatekeepers of public health. Omission of adverse events is one of the specific allegations leveled against the applicant. As I mentioned in my written comment, an organization convinced it's on a mission to save the world might find justification of any means to do so. But the FDA's broadest mission is that of protecting public health. Patients living with PTSD need rigorously tested care, not the faith healing of a therapy cult's latest rebrand of laying on of hands. The concerns I share today aren't about the safety of MDMA, but rather the people who have been administering and supervising this medicine. Harms and misconduct will scale if they are allowed to train and certify therapists. Thank you.
That was Brian Pace, PhD, a lecturer who teaches psychedelic studies at The University of Ohio. Ifitayo Harvey is the executive director of the People of Color Psychedelic Collective.
My name is Ifitayo Harvey. I'm the executive director of the People of Color Psychedelic Collective. My organization provides education and community outreach to those interested in learning about psychedelics and ending the war on drugs. I've worked in the broader drug policy reform field for 11 years. In those 11 years, I worked as Rick Doble's assistant at the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies for 8 months in 2015. Despite my poor treatment as an employee, I'm grateful to MAPS for pioneering a movement around psychedelic healing in clinical settings. I believe part of the reason why we're here is the question surrounding the efficacy of MDMA-assisted psychotherapy for people with PTSD. But I also think the other part of the reason why we're here is because this is the first time, in my opinion, that advocates have had the space to share and have others engage their concerns. There's a tendency in the psychedelic community to shy away from critiques or confrontations. This hearing may not have been as bustling had leaders in the field address some of the questions speakers are bringing up today. I consider a lot of the speakers colleagues, and one common theme between us is that we entered the psychedelic field as enthusiasts for the movement. Yet, we know when we love something, you must critique it. For the last few years, I've critiqued MAPS for their lack of inclusion of non-white study subjects. I've also witnessed the field and MAPS dismiss valid concerns from other critics and a refusal to engage those concerns. While some may see this hearing as a detraction, I see it as an opportunity to improve our movement and ensure consumer safety. After seeing the evidence of abuses, cross boundaries, and buried discrepancies, I've concluded that there needs to be more rigorous research on MDMA-assisted psychotherapy before it's brought to the public. As an advocate for ending the war on drugs, I believe that all drugs should be decriminalized and regulated. Yet there's a need for research-backed understanding and guidance on safe, effective use of psychedelics. Rigorous accountability standards and a moral degree of integrity are central to my commitment. I hope that after this hearing, the field starts to hold itself to a higher standard.
That was Ifitayo Harvey, executive director of the People of Color Psychedelic Collective. Now here's Matthew Baggett, PhD, a neuroscientist and CEO of Tactogen.
I am Matthew Baggett. I am the CEO of Tactogen, a company developing medicines that could compete with those of Lykos. From about 1999 to 2001, I worked as a part-time contractor for the nonprofit former parent company of Lykos. I additionally advised Journey Clinical and the Noetic Fund. I thank the agency, committee, sponsor, and other participants today for their work and for the opportunity to comment. I would also like to acknowledge and thank all those who've come forward to provide information and concerns about the NDA. I am speaking today in support of the approval of MDMA as a medicine. I speak as a neuroscientist who has conducted basic research on the pharmacology and toxicology of MDMA in humans and rodents. This has included administering MDMA to healthy volunteers in investigator-initiated studies. As a basic scientist, I focus my comments on risks. Compared to most new chemical entities, the risks of MDMA are unusually well understood. To date, the National Institute on Drug Abuse has funded $460 million of projects involving MDMA. Over 1,500 participants have been given MDMA in studies not sponsored by Lykos. In addition to controlled experiments, 22 million people in the United States, that's 7.8% of those 12 or older, have reportedly used illicit MDMA preparations. What we know from all this is reassuring. Despite often unsafe contexts, illicit MDMA use only rarely causes clinically meaningful problems. Controlled MDMA administration studies document manageable physiological risks, such as time-limited cardiovascular changes and, when fluid intake is unrestricted, hyponatremia. Controlled MDMA administration studies also confirms acute self-report changes in mood and social feelings. These changes, combined with MDMA's history, raise reasonable concerns that MDMA might increase patient vulnerability to boundary violations or other harms. Self-report measures appear to be our most sensitive way to track related potential impairments. These measures indicate that acute emotional effects are diminishing by 150 minutes and are typically statistically insignificant by 6 hours after a single dose of MDMA in healthy participants. Additional data are needed to document the time course of changes in patients and/or when a divided dose is given. As a separate area of concern, illicit MDMA preparations are reported by a subset of users to lower mood beginning several days after exposure. Given this concern, I am reassured by the sponsors and the agency's attention to suicidal ideation and behaviors as risks in patients. Overall, it is clear that MDMA can be used with acceptable safety under medical supervision. Additional data will help quantify likelihoods and time courses of specific risks in patients, but the balance of apparent benefits and risks appears to me favorable.
That was Matthew Baggett, PhD, a neuroscientist and CEO of Tactogen, providing public comment at a June 4th meeting of the FDA's Psychopharmacologic Drugs Advisory Committee, at which the committee was considering an application for approval of MDMA-assisted therapy submitted by Lykos Therapeutics. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear a bit more of the public comment. Duraine Young is a licensed therapist, CDWF, CDTL, co-author of a New York Times bestseller entitled You Are Your Best Thing, a retired military police officer, and the founder of Black Therapists Rock.
Hello, my name is Duraine Young, and I'm speaking on behalf of Black Therapists Rock and the Veterans Mental Health Leadership Coalition. I am a mom, a licensed therapist, a retired military mental health officer, and the executive director of Black Therapists Rock. Black Therapists Rock is a nonprofit organization that mobilizes over 30,000 BIPOC mental health professionals to reduce intergenerational trauma in marginalized communities. When I personally left my hometown of Wichita Falls, Texas, to join the Air Force shortly after high school, I had no idea what the word trauma really meant. I had witnessed and lived it throughout my childhood, but didn't have the language to articulate the pain in my heart that I carried for many years. I grew up in a town that was deeply segregated by race and class, and regularly held KKK rallies. In addition, I was the oldest of three girls whose mother attempted to numb her untreated symptoms of bipolar disorder with crack cocaine throughout the 80s and 90s. As a child, my family heavily relied upon government assistance for medical care, food, and housing. But I was specifically taught to not trust these agencies and was repeatedly told that what happens in this house stays in this house. While I was an active duty captain stationed at Aviano Air Force Base in Italy, I provided mental health treatment directly to military members and families as well. During that time, I established Black Therapists Rock shortly after the murder of Trayvon Martin to work on my own personal healing. By the time I had gained an undergrad in social psychology and two master's degrees, however, the intellect in my head did very little to heal the traumatic experiences that still lived in my body. During my own MDMA therapy session, I came face to face with my own racial trauma and was able to acknowledge the multi-layered fear of men, white body people, and all authority figures. My healing from this session was so profound that I decided to get trained in MDMA therapy myself. I also advocated and facilitated scholarships to train over 100 other therapists of color in psychedelic assisted therapy specifically for racial trauma to ensure that there will be enough culturally attuned professionals if and when this medicine is approved as a treatment for PTSD. Racial trauma, deeply ingrained through generations of discrimination and systemic injustice, leaves scars not just on individuals, but on entire families and communities as well. The shame, fear, and deep mistrust it inflicts can be pervasive and debilitating. Traditional therapy approaches often fall short in addressing the depth and complexities of these types of traumas. As my colleague Nidia Gwiti describes, traditional talk therapy is like riding a bicycle towards healing compared to psychedelic-assisted therapy, which is like riding a motorcycle. In terms of racial trauma, MDMA-assisted therapies offers a significant beacon of hope. Thank you for the time and allowing me to speak today.
That was Duraine Young, a licensed therapist and founder of Black Therapists Rock. Here's the Reverend Joe Welker, pastor at the East Craftsbury Presbyterian Church in Craftsbury, Vermont.
My name is Joe Welker. I'm the pastor of East Craftsbury Presbyterian Church in Craftsbury, Vermont. I have no financial relationships to report. I completed chaplaincy training at the Charles George VA Medical Center, where I worked with many veterans who suffer from PTSD. I know that condition is not trivial. I fully support and I'm grateful for anyone who has gotten and will get healing from MDMA for PTSD, including in this trial. But I also speak as a former member of the psychedelic industry before I became a whistleblower on a study at Johns Hopkins University, where funders and researchers with intimate ties to Lykos, then known as MAPS, advanced a religious and spiritual agenda that is shared by Lykos founder and executive director, Dr. Rick Doblin, as Dr. Pace has just described. I feel compelled to echo concerns warning the public of what is an openly known secret in the psychedelic industry, that in the words of Dr. Doblin, his long-term desire is a quote, spiritualized humanity, politically advancing this mission using the reputation of science. This study has functioned as that first politically savvy Trojan horse of that mission. As I submitted in written comments, while one may argue the legitimacy of psychedelic spiritual beliefs on their own merits, how do we trust data when a company not only has financial conflicts of interest, but open spiritual and religious conflicts of interest? And like the worst of religions, including my own, what happens when people are abused in the name of a religious mission? As we saw in these trials, they are often discarded, silenced, minimized for political gain, and tossed away as inconvenient. And so while I support anyone who gets healing from MDMA therapy, I'm here in support of people harmed in these trials, many other victims of psychedelic therapy abuse, all of their family and friends, former Lykos employees, academics, whistleblowers, the many who have spoken anonymously to the media, journalists and others who have concerns about the intermingling of a utopian spiritual movement with science. I must also say there is a certain irony in questions earlier about risk assessment and whether participants increase in illicit use of MDMA. Both the FDA and the public should be aware that this study is run primarily by people with an extensive use of MDMA in illicit settings. It would be hard to find a bigger promoter of illicit MDMA use in American history than Dr. Doblin. Dr. Doblin's public advocacy gives the impression that Lykos leadership would think any increase in illicit use would not be a bug, but a feature. Again, I am a former psychonaut, and I do fully support people who got healing in this trial or elsewhere from psychedelics. And I support continuing research into MDMA therapy. But while Lykos leadership may envision a spiritualized humanity, in this very study, Lykos treated the people who were harmed under their care with a falsely spiritual inhumanity. Regardless of the decision made today and in August, the public deserves to know that. Thank you.
That was the Reverend Joe Welker, pastor at the East Craftsbury Presbyterian Church in Craftsbury, Vermont, providing public comment at a June 4th meeting of the FDA's Psychopharmacologic Drugs Advisory Committee, at which the committee was considering an application for approval of MDMA-assisted therapy, which was submitted by Lykos Therapeutics. The committee voted against the application, recommending that FDA reject it. A final decision by the agency is expected by August 11th. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.